We begin today's shir with the Gemara on Sanhedrin Daf Tzadi Aleph and Beis, about 13 lines from the top. A continuing conversation between Antoninus and Rebbe. Antoninus, a leading public figure in Rome. Rebbe is the leader of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael in the end of the second, beginning of the third century. So Amarli Antoninus the Rebbe. Antoninus said to Rebbe, Bibnei ma chama yotza. But Mizrach v'shokas b'marav. Why does the sun rise in the east and set in the west? So it seems like it's a scientific question, but he's asking it from a philosophical, religious, theological question. So Amar Lei, the Rebbe says back to Antoninus, Yihava ivcha, nami hachi hava amrat li. If the opposite were true, that the sun rose in the west and set in the east, you would have asked me the same question. So Amar Lei, Antoninus said back to Rebbe, Hachi kamina lach. This is my question. Why does it set in the west? Why does it rise in the east and set in the west? What's this question? So according to Rashi, Rashi understands that this question is Mipnei ma shaka b'marav. Rashi says, why isn't it simply circle the whole, I guess, circle, start from the east, circle all the way to the west and back to the east? Why isn't it set in the east? That's the way he understands it. Rebbe gives the following answer. Amar Lei, Kedei Litein Shalom Lakona, in order to give a Shalom Aleichem to the Master, Shenamar Utzva Shemayim Lachamish Tachavim. And this is a pasuk in Nechemiah, that the hosts of the heaven worship you. In other words, the leading, the sun represents the natural world. It's a leading force in the natural world. And the natural world pays tribute to God. And God's Shekhinah, and we see in another Gemara, God's Shekhinah is found where? In the west. We know that the Kodesh HaKadoshim, how do we know the Kodesh HaKadoshim? In the Beis HaMikdash, which is where the Aron is, it's located in the western part of the Mikdash. So this idea that the sun sets in the west as if it's giving shalom, paying tribute to acknowledging God. As Antoninu said, Omar Lei, Veteti ad Pago de Rakia, Vetitin Shalom of a tail. So why does the sun then go all the way to the west to give a shalom, to offer greetings or to pay tribute to God, to the Shekhinah? Why does it go so close? Let it go to the, half the day, 12 p.m. as it were, the top of the sky, how we see it. And then Rashi says, "Umisham tishtach v'kalapi marav." And then it should bow, as it were, to the west. Why should it go so close? And Rashi points out, "Shekein derech bnei adam shemishtach v'berichuk or berachuk lifnei hamelach v'einu miskarav kol kach." Someone's bowing down to the king, they don't get so close up to the king. They bow at a distance. So why shouldn't the sun, setting of the sun is viewed as bowing down to the Shekhinah? Why is the sun bowing down so close to the Shekhinah, all the way at west? It should bow down at a distance when the sun's at the height, as we see it. So the answer is a very unusual answer. And the Rebbe says, Mishum Paul and Mishum Ovid Derachim. Because of workers and travelers. If the sun did not proceed from east to west, with the light of day gradually diminishing, they wouldn't know that it's time to go home, it's time to find a place to stay, it's time to finish up work. It's fascinating because the first half of Rebbe's answer is a theological answer, that the sun is paying tribute to God. And the second half is a pragmatic answer, that if the sun sets immediately, right away, the workers, the people who are traveling, don't have a way to plan. Rav Bick wanted to explain that really the question is, it's more of a philosophical question, is the world linear or cyclical? In other words, we simply start again every day, or do we seek to achieve to find the greater goal? So when the sun is starting in the east and it sets in the west, that means we're going from point A to point B. We're moving. We're always moving forward. But what do we do? What do? After we progress, we pay tribute to God. In other words, our accomplishment that we achieve during the day, and then we pay tribute to God. We realize it all comes from God. We only can achieve, truly achieve, when we recognize that all comes from God. That's what the sun does. Moving forward, and then it pays tribute to God. At the same time, part of achieving our goals is planning, right? The traveler, the worker has to plan in order to, they can't all of a sudden, the sun all of a sudden stops suddenly and it sets immediately without waning to plan. So then you're not going to be able to proceed, you're not going to be able to plan, you know, how the day's going to go. It's going to just stop suddenly. So the goal is that you progress, but it's also important to plan. So that's what we do each and every day. We progress, we pay tribute to God. I'm sorry, we progress, we plan to end off, to accomplish our goals, to make sure that we've accomplished, and then to pay tribute to God. And that's the way that we can preserve what was created. And that's really the goal, that every day builds on yesterday. And tomorrow builds on today. The day after builds on the day after that, the day before that. But the point is, we progress, we plan, we pay tribute to God, and we do it again the next day. That perhaps one way to look at this conversation between Rebbe and Antoninus. Antoninus now asks Rebbe another question. Antoninus asks Rebbe, Neshama me masai nidna. When was the neshama placed in man? Nidna bottom. Bishas pekido, bishas yitzira, from the time of pekida or from the time of formation. So Pekida is generally understood as a time of conception. Rashi understands it's Pekida is when the angel is pokeed, the drop of semen before God to decide the nature of the baby. When it, like, it appoints or it places the drop before God to decide the nature of the baby. When the angel brings the prototype of the human being before God, and God determines the nature of the baby. The Yad Ramah has another way of understanding it, that Mishas Pekida, Mishas Shaisha Koletes Es Atipa LeBeis HaHirayon, the time that the woman collects the semen into her reproductive system, that's the time of Pekida. But both, whatever explanation, Rashi or the Yad Ramah, Pekida is the time of conception, and Yetzira is the formation of the embryo, about 40 days after conception. When is the neshama placed in the person? So, Rebbe first thinks, Amar Le, Mishas Yitzir, we think it's from the time of formation. Amar Le, Antoninus says back to Rebbe, Efshar Chatikha Shabbos, Omeres Shloshi Yomim Blo Melach. Is it possible for a piece of meat to stand, to be around 3 days without salt? Veina Misrachas, it doesn't get spoiled? Can't be that the body is forming inside the woman without the neshama. Even though we say that the neshama is really only inside the body, but we're saying the body cannot survive, even the smallest amount of the body, even at the smallest amount while it's developing, it can't survive without the neshama. Again, it's not a scientific question, but that's what he's sort of giving that as an example. The Maral points out that it can't be that inside the tipa there's the drop of semen, there's a neshama, because there's no kli, there's nothing to house the neshama. The point is that the tipa has the drop of semen has the power, has a force, and eventually develops into, its fertilized egg develops into, forms into a fetus inside the mother. But that, according to Antoninus, can only take place if there's a neshama inside the person. So Amar Rebbe says, Davar Zelim Dani Antoninus. This is something that Antoninus taught me, which is interesting. We see that on a philosophical matter, Rebbe agrees with Antoninus. Rebbe learns from the non-Jew. And he says, Mikra Messiah, there's actually a pasuk that supports Antoninus' position. The pasuk is from an Eov, Ufkudascha Shamra Ruchi, and your providence guarded my spirit. And but the Pkudascha means from the time of Pekida, from the time of conception, that the Ruach is guarded. In other words, the soul is or guarded or is placed inside the person. So the question really is, now this is this Talmudic passage is used in a number of contexts. Perhaps the question is, when does the neshama enter the fetus or enter the baby? This is a mystical question. This may relate to the question of abortion. Maybe. It doesn't necessarily mean that once there's a neshama inside the baby in utero, that abortion is forbidden. But the question simply could be is, when does the neshama enter the person, enter the baby? Is it at conception, at formation 40 days later, or is it a later point? So this Gemara takes the view that the neshama enters the baby or the fetus, the embryo, at the time of conception. So even if someone does an abortion within a week after fertilization of the egg, it's still destroying the neshama. It may not be ritzicha, it may not be murder, it may not be prohibited under many circumstances, but this is an interesting source in the abortion discussion. It's also an interesting source in the question of a situation where the egg donor is different than the birth mother. So let's say a husband fertilizes an egg of a woman who's not married, so he does IVF with a woman who's not married to, and so the egg is fertilized in a laboratory through IVF, and then the fertilized egg is placed inside the man's wife. So who is the mother? Is it the egg donor the mother, or is the birth mother the mother? So some poskim use this Gemara to say that the egg donor is the mother. Why? Since the neshama occurs at the moment of conception, so the argument would be that motherhood would also be imparted at the time of conception. That's the argument. There, by the way, there are other sources. There are many different sources, a lot of different debates. A lot of different sources that are brought down to that some prove that the egg donor is the mother and some say that the birth mother is the mother. There are a whole host of sources. Perhaps the most interesting of the sources to prove that the birth mother is the mother is this fascinating Targum that is associated with Yonatan ben Uziel. The Torah has some strange language. It says, Va'achar yolda bas v'tikresh madina, that after Leah had her sixth son, it says, Va'achar, and afterwards, she gave birth to a daughter and called her name Dina. So strange language, Va'achar Yolda, should have said Va'tolad. What's and after what? So Gemara says after what? So Gemara Bracha says that after she davened that the baby should be, that she got pregnant, she davened the baby should be a girl, not a boy, because she wanted Rachel, she had a prophecy that there would be 12 boys, 12 Shvatim. And if she has a seventh boy and the two other maidservants each have two boys, so then that would only leave one boy to Rachel. So she davened that the baby should be a girl, according to the Gemara in Brachos, Daf Samach Amud Aleph. So she had originally a boy inside of her, and then the boy turned into a girl after she davened. But the Targum that's associated with Yonatan ben Uziel, it has a different view. It actually says that at that time Rachel was pregnant and Leah was pregnant, and according to Targum Yonatan ben Uziel, the Leah was pregnant with a boy, and Rachel was pregnant with a girl, and they switched. Miraculously, the boy was miraculously switched to Rachel's womb, and the girl was switched to Leah's womb. And therefore, and so really, let's say when Yosef was born to Rachel was the birth mother, but Leah was the egg donor. And nevertheless, this child is called the son of Rachel. So this would indicate that the birth mother is the mother, if you follow this position of Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. But again, there's a lot of discussion as to this topic, and our Gemara is used to as a source for those who hold that the egg donor is the mother in these contexts. Rav Bick points out that the point of this Gemara that says that the neshama enters the baby at the time of conception means that a human being from the beginning of existence is in the image of God. It's not that the human is created and then their destiny is decided in the middle of life. There's a plan from the outset, at the time of Pekida, from the planning stage, the neshama is placed in. In other words, man and woman are charged with greatness from the very beginning. There's an idea of a human being taking place from the time of conception. From the moment of our creation, there's a plan, a vision for us that we have a certain goal in our life. Not that we're created and then at some point later we have this mission. No, at the outset, at the planning stage, we have a neshama, the very beginning. And the last Gemara that we'll do today is another conversation between Antoninus and Rebbe. V'amar le Antoninus, the Rebbe. Antoninus says, the Rebbe, Mimasa Yitzhahara Sholeit Ba'adam. When does Yitzhahara Sholeit? What does it rule over a person? That's an interesting language. It doesn't say Nitna Ba'adam. It says that the Neshama is given to a person. Yitzhahara is rules over a person. Torah's Chaim points out that it rules over a person, but we can then counteract that. In other words, we have the ability to fight back against the Yetzirah. So when does it start attacking us? When does the Yetzirah try to rule over us? Is it Mishas Yetzirah? Mishas Yetzirah is it from the time that the formation of the embryo, or is it from the time that from birth, from Yetzirah, from the time of Yetzirah when the fetus leaves the mother. So, Amar Le Mishas Yetzira. So, initially, Rabbi thought it was from the time of the formation of the embryo. So, Amar Le, Antoninus says back to Rabbi Imkain, Boit Bimei Imo Vyotse, that if there was a Yetzer Hara inside of the baby, inside, when the baby was inside the mother, then it would kick the mother's stomach, or inside the mother, and it would leave. So Elamishas Yitzia. So rather, it's from the time of Yitzia, from the time of birth. Omar Rebbe says, Davarze Limdani Antoninus. So Antoninus taught me this thing again. He's following in a philosophical matter. Rebbe listened to Antoninus. Umikram is Sayon. A Pasuk supports Antoninus Shemar, because the Pasuk says, La Pesach Chatos Rovetz. By the opening, sin crouches at the opening, meaning when the womb opens and the baby leaves, so that's when sin starts. The potential for sin starts, that's when the Yetzer Hara starts. So a couple of points here. So number one, that this Gemara, which seems to say that there's no Yetzer Hara when the baby's in utero, seems to go against that famous Medrash in Bereishis Rabba that says, and Rashi quotes it, that when Rivka was pregnant and when she would go by a house of idolatry, Esav's in utero would start kicking. And when she would go by a house of Torah, Yaakov would start kicking. So, and that's what he says, Lamas Anochi, this is not natural. So, was this an exception to the rule? Maybe. The commentary called the Be'er Sheva wants to say that there's a Yitzhahara Machshavti and Yitzhahara Masi. There's a Yitzhahara in thought, and that's created from the time of the formation of the embryo. And therefore, Esav b'machshav and thought had some Yetzer Hara. That's why he was kicking to go to the house of idolatry. But the Yetzer Hara Ma'asi, the Yetzer Hara in actuality, is only from the time of birth. That's why the Yetzer Hara desired to go to the house of idolatry, but didn't physically do anything. The Maharal has a different take in the Gur Aryeh in his commentary on Parshas Toldos. He wants to say that it wasn't the Yetzer Hara. It was Esav's nature, his teva, was drawn to idolatry. It's not based on his Yetzer Hara. In other words, we have certain atios, we have some natural inclinations. What is a Yetzer Hara? So I was thinking that, what's a Yetzer Hara? So let's say someone's born You know, let's say someone's born, a Jew is born, not knowing anything about Shabbos. He has a Yetzer Hara to violate Shabbos. He doesn't have a Yetzer Hara to violate Shabbos. He just not violate. He doesn't know anything about Shabbos. He's not observing Shabbos. It's not a Yetzer Hara. He doesn't know any better. Rav Dessler, in his famous work in Michtav Meliyahu, he has an essay called Nekudas HaBechira, the Bechira point. So he says, what's Bechira? Bechira is a tension between what we know is objectively correct and what a Yetzer Hara tries to convince us of what we perceive to be correct. The Yetzer Hara convinces us that something is correct, but it doesn't reflect reality. So we were born with certain natural inclinations for something. It's not necessarily Yetzer Hara is drawing us to that position. Let's say someone's brought up in a society of thieves. So he thinks it's okay to steal. That's his natural inclination. Not his Yetzer Hara is telling him to do that. That's his environment that he grows up in. Once he learns that stealing is wrong, now he has the heart to steal. There's a tension between what is objectively correct and what his Yitzhahara is trying to convince him. So it could be that Esav, his natural inclination was to idolatry. It's not his Yitzhahara. In any case, so that's different ways to try to reconcile our Gemara with that there's no real Yitzhahara until the baby is born, leaves the mother's womb. At the same time, we can still see how Esav, still inside the mother's womb, until Rivka's womb, was still pushing towards the house of Avodah Zarah. What's the point of this story? So, could be that the point is that the Yetzer Hara is a natural part of man, right? A natural part. Not everyone. Yetzer Hara is the beginning of life. We have a neshama, and we also have a Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara is part of what makes us human. Is the Yetzer Hara really bad? So maybe the point is like this, that in order, what's the greatest good? The greatest good is to be like God. God has Bechira Chafshis. God has the free will to do good and evil, and obviously God always chooses to do good. So we were given free choice, free will. We were given the ability to do good, and that's what makes us human. So having free will means the possibility of evil. When we're in our parents' womb, we don't have Yetzer Hara because we don't have free will. Only once we're in the real world, then we have free will, and then we have a Yetzer Hara. In other words, we are all good, but we become good through the possibility of evil. We can only be who we are with our Bechira Chafshis if we have the possibility of evil. So Yetzer Hara is going to go to necessary evil so that we can have Bechira Chafshis so we can achieve the greatest good. And that's the point. And the point of the story is that, again, the neshama is our plan from when we're created. We have a great destiny to be human. Part of being human is when we actually leave the womb and we have the ability, we have the reality of life, and we have the possibility of evil, but that's what makes us human, and that's where we can achieve our greatest good, our free will, to become like a Kadosh Baruch Hu, to have free will and to choose to do good, and that's what ultimately makes us human, and that perhaps is the point of the story.